This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 816, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are boosted and thoughtful and helpful, considerate, and thinking of others. Nobody's problem but mine. Said I ain't nobody's problem but mine. Said I ain't nobody's issue. Don't you come around, babe. I don't miss you at all. Ain't nobody's problem but my own. Hello and welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 816. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with my co-host Josh Flanagan.
What's up? What's up? What's good, people?
And our semi-regular guest host, fill-in, third chair host, Ryan Haupt.
I'm not wearing tweed, but I am wearing a scarf.
When's the last time we did three people on a show?
It's been a while. Like a month ago? Or was, no, it was just him and I? That was just
800?
800.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
That was
800?
Yeah.
16 episodes.
I mean, I wouldn't remember.
That's not a regular show.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I gotta tell you, I had a really hard time with the script and what I was gonna write before Ryan's name.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't think of anything that really covered it that didn't sound dismissive or like, it was like, our friend. No, that's not informal enough.
He's not our friend, really.
Guest host. He's not host. That's not exactly right. So that's why I came up with the brilliant marketing term, semi-regular guest host. I think guest is wrong.
To be fair, I wrote that. You actually just left me out of the script when you sent it. I wasn't in it.
Really?
That makes more sense.
I remember writing.
It was just blank when you sent it. I had to write some. I wrote semi-regular guest host myself. That is a self-imposed title.
I definitely struggle with that. I wonder. That's interesting. I think we came up with the same kind of thing. But like, I have a thing sometimes where like I'll be working on a script and for some reason the version I send is earlier. I don't know.
Every
why.
Once in a while, yeah, I think there's a thing where like if you attach it to the email before you save it, mm-hmm. like things yes. get weird. I've noticed.
Maybe that's it. Anyway, go along. Where are iFanboy?
We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, or this week less comics, and one of us picks our favorite book called The Pick of the Week, and we talk about that book and other books in the week, and it's a patron pick, and sometimes listener mail. We have a good time. We got a lot to talk about, so we're going to get going. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. Josh had the pick this week.
Yeah, I definitely sent this before I saved it. Justice League 2022 Annual Number 1 is the pick of the week. My justifications are thus. I had no expectations of this book. In fact, I was almost like, do I want to even keep reading this Justice League book? And then I kind of saw it was an annual, and I said, well, all right, let's take a look at this. It probably stands on its own, or it's going to do a different thing. And I right away, the art was different. It was Sanford Green, who did the book with David. No, he did David F. Walker.
He did the David Walker image book. Bitter Root.
Right, and they did Iron Fist and Power Man before that.
Yep.
And, I mean, I noticed the art before I noticed the name, but right away, in terms of, and then the colorists were Matt Herms, who I don't know, and Sanford Green, the artist himself, and I thought, oh, this looks different and exciting. than it has looked for a while. So that was my first sort of hook.
It looked like a top shelf book. And not just because of Sanford Green's art, who's terrific, but the way they colored it and the sort of, it almost looked like it was distressed, like it was on rough paper.
Oh, you said top shelf, and I was thinking Top Cow, and I was like, what the hell are you talking about? No. Yes, I agree with what you're saying. It's like, it doesn't look like Top Cow at all.
Also, the lettering, we should point out, from Josh Reed.
Yeah.
All of it together made it look like it was an indie comic, which was great.
It did. And it was really cool.
I mean, honestly, a lot of times you can tell a Brian Bendis book just from looking at a page, for whatever reason. You know, the way that he puts his dialogue, and some of that's there, but it doesn't look like a Brian Bendis book.
Yeah, the way the words balloons stack in a Brian Bendis book kind of has its own rhythm.
But also, like, it just doesn't look like the kind of artist that he normally works with. And I don't know how to explain it, but so a lot of things came together there. And, you know, I love Brian Bendis. Brian Bendis is an integral part of my comic book reader DNA. And I want these to work out really well. And so you got this time traveler story, OMAC, Kirby's one-man army corps, shows up, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't fully understand the story or what happened. But
did you read the first issue of Justice League versus Legion of Superheroes?
No.
This ties into it, but it tied into it in such a subtle way that I didn't even actually realize they were connected until the end, when they also pointed out, go read Justice League versus Legion.
I did see that series,
which already happened.
Yeah. But I didn't feel like I was missing anything. In fact, I just was like, oh, we're in the middle of a Justice League Super Friends adventure, and it's crazy.
No, I mean,
and
it's basically a one shot. It's a lead into that miniseries, but you don't need to have read it because it takes place after. But yeah, you could totally read this as just a single story, which it basically is.
Yeah.
Well, it's time travel, so who can really say?
Right.
Yeah, and it was actually pretty. So you've got this one character who's showing up, a Lord of Time, not a Time Lord. That's a different thing. And there's several versions of him from different times throughout his life. It's confusing. It's hard for me to explain. So if you're like, you don't know what you're talking about, you're correct. I don't. But they split the team up, and they each go, you know, deal with him, different parts of him, deal with different ages of the person. And even though I was hanging on by my fingernails, I was super compelled with the gosh, good old superhero aspect of the whole thing. There's also little character things that Bendis has put into his Justice League that I think help solidify some of the characters in my mind, or at least these versions of them. So, you know, he brought in Black Adam as a Justice Leaguer, and we know that there's going to be a movie, and it's The Rock and whatever, so making Black Adam fully evil isn't going to be a thing. But they're kind of turning around. I like the story that they attached to the way that they were doing it. You know, the idea is basically that, you know, one of the time travelers says, "Wait, where are you in the Black Adam, Teth Adam series? Are you the evil one, or have you become the greatest ever?" And the idea is that we're learning that he's on some continuum, where journey. He's on his way somewhere.
I think that works if you have the wisdom of a god at your disposal, because like there's always this weird interplay with Billy Batson, like how much is he listening to Solomon versus being a dumb kid. And so like I like that in the long arc of Black Adam's life, like he maybe eventually learns to tap into that wisdom in a way that makes him a better person,
which is interesting. And it's not.
It is interesting.
And this is a thing where we've said that, you know, if you're saying a story is preordained because there's this long history, like a lot of times it's silly that they're putting these mythologies into a book that were never read. This fits with this. It totally does. I remember really liking Black Adam as part of, I want to say it was Justice Society.
Justice Society, yeah. Jeff Johns.
From Jeff Johns. And so I like him. I like different versions of Black Adam. And I find it just to be really compelling. So I'm interested in reading that part of the story, you know, and people don't kind of trust him, and the fact that like a character who's thousands of years old can kind of learn and evolve and change. I don't know, there's something about that I like. It doesn't work with every character, but it works with this character to me. And probably partially because what, you know, Ryan is saying, like you're imbuing him with all these powers. He wouldn't necessarily just go evil. I love the way that Aquaman is drawn in this book.
He's beefy. Like,
Dad bought Aquaman.
Yeah, and he's just a beefy, sort of manly man of the sea. He could be a fisherman. Like, he looks like a fisherman from Maine.
Oh, yeah, that guy's hauling in nets, for sure.
Yeah. He
looks like Russell Crowe from Gladiator body.
Yeah, and that's great.
Russell Crowe.
I like that the Flash is he's still got his sort of youthful energy, but he also has, you know, they listen to him. Like, you know about time travel. Tell us about this thing.
Batman, that was good. That was a good moment. Yeah.
You know, it keeps going.
I like the Green Arrow and Black Canary have an almost paternalistic attitude towards John Kent.
Yeah.
Like, in a good way, like, where they're looking out for him. Like, he's way more powerful than they are, but they're like, hey, like, are you, you know, you doing okay? Like, Super Kid is down, you know, I liked that they kind of had his back, even though he may or may not have needed it, but it was good.
They've really developed into an interest, and this is across DC, not just this book. They've really developed into a good sort of veteran sort of couple, and they work together. It's like Coach and Mrs. Coach, Friday.
Yeah, they're the old pros.
Yeah, they're a good team. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up, and I noticed, is that they drew Wonder Woman. Diana comes back, and they drew her mother, and made them look very not Caucasian. Like, they looked more Greek.
Yeah, they looked Mediterranean. Like, yeah,
I know they should, but it was very specific. I was like, oh, their faces look different than everybody else. They kind of look like they should. It doesn't look like, you know, a white fashion model from the 60s. And it stood out. I thought, oh, that's really interesting. That's sort of a subtle way of sort of confirming the diversity of those characters, like, through the art. You know, not crazy, but, like, this is actually a little more appropriate. And I noticed it. And I noticed it in a way that wasn't distracting. I gotta say, I was just in love with the way this book looked. I was like, why isn't this guy doing more books? And I know he's doing that Image book or whatever, but I just remember how
Solid Wonder Woman costume design, too. Like, it just looks great.
I just remember how much we loved that Iron Fist and Power Man
book. That was a great book. I mean, these are incredibly dynamic pages, in addition to the character work. There's a lot of pages you don't really see too often anymore. A lot of full page spreads that they sort of get away from because, you know, this is an annual, it's double size, so they have more real estate. Whereas a regular issue, you don't have time for, you know, maybe an impactful splash page. And so you get a lot more of that in here, which is nice.
I think it was 40 pages of story. You know, end of the day, I expected nothing, and I thought, oh, that was really, it wasn't the greatest comic ever. I might never think about it again until you know, Sanford Green shows up again. I'm like, oh, yeah, I really liked that. But on a week, and I liked comics. I had several things I could have made pick of the week. None of them were fives necessarily, but there are a lot of real strong fours. And so that's why it's pick of the week.
I think this is also one of the better Bendis Justice League issues. And better 100%. Sort of Justice League stories that we've had in a while. This is an issue you can pick up. You don't have to have been reading the Justice League book. You don't have to be reading anything else. You don't even have to have read Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes like Josh didn't. It's just a single issue, classic, evergreen Justice League story. That looks great.
100%.
It looks really great.
Yeah. So there's your pick of the week.
Nice little superhero party in the beginning.
It's a nice little superhero party.
Hawk Girl, not the Hawk Guy.
Speaking of,
Hawkeye.
How about that for transition? That was great. I nailed that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, you did. It's a segue. Hawkeye, Kate Bishop, number 4. I almost made this pick of the week. I have come around to the. At first, I wasn't sure if I liked this series because it's written very millennially.
Because you're old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, because I'm old. But you know, I think that out of all the replacement characters that have taken place over the years, A, Kate Bishop was not one of those. She came from an earlier time. And 2, I think she kind of captures the essence of the things some of the things I liked about Hawkeye that he doesn't anymore.
The lovable fuck up.
Yeah, there really is something to it. And, you know, that the show didn't hurt, but I had been growing a soft spot for that character for a while, you know. Perfect world, would I want her there? Would I want her called Hawkeye? I don't know, but I'm much less resistant to it than I used to be. And I just thought it was just fun. It was a good Kate Bishop story. I don't know any of the names that worked in this book other than Joey C. And, you know, it's this story where, like, she's her sister, who she's got problems with, invites her to a exotic hotel destination or whatever, and there's supervillains and mind control and blah, blah, blah. But it was just kind of rompy and fun. And, you know, in a world after that, the TV series, and you were looking for more Kate Bishop comics, I think this is a pretty good place to go to. And I can't always say that about the Kate Bishop books that I've read. They've been sort of up and down.
I feel like it's also surprisingly rare for a comic to come out contemporaneously with the big media property to like that actually supplements it well.
Yeah.
And this book, I think, kind of does that.
Yeah, and the art has a, who am I thinking of? The Private Eye.
Marcos Martín.
Marcos Martín?
Yeah, sort of a Marcos Martín kind of feel to it. It's sort of like a Spanish artist. I don't know who these people are. You know, but I was kind of surprised by it. Like, at first, I was like, I'm not sure I like this. And then I kept reading it and picking up the issues, and by the end, I was looking forward to it. So, yeah. But I mean, literally, I almost made it pick of the week. I was like, oh, it's really, again, sort of an unexpected sort of joy. I don't know if I'm trying to find things that I like more, but it's just really good looking book too, compared to what you'd think.
I don't love the design or the way the dog is drawn.
With his big floppy lips.
Super nitpicky.
He's no longer a golden retriever.
No, it doesn't look. He doesn't look like a golden retriever. He looks like a big hound, like a hunting, hound dog or something. Which is, I imagine that dogs fall into the horses category of things artists. You know, unless you love drawing them, you probably hate drawing them. And so I'm more than happy to let it slide. It stuck out to me as like it just felt off model.
Is that a Dave Johnson cover? Janoi Lindsay. That's the correct dog on the cover.
Yeah.
But not interiorly. Connor, I assume you didn't read this.
No, I read the first issue and I hated it. And so I never read it.
Yeah, I didn't like it, but for some reason I kept going. But near the end.
I read the first issue and thought it was fine. And then when Josh put it on the script, I caught up last night. So
did you find it was better than you thought it would have been?
It's middling to me.
Middling?
No, it's truly middling. Like it. I didn't not like it, but I wasn't super compelled by it. Like it, you know. I think my pick of the week would have been the next book we're about to talk about. Yeah, if we need a transition,
might as well.
Yeah. That was also in contention. Go on.
Maestro World War End number one.
Oh, geez.
Is the first issue of the third and final prequel miniseries from Peter David and Herman Peralta and Pasquale Ferri. That's the prequel series to Hulk Future Imperfect, the classic early 90s story that Peter David and George Perez did. And there's a nice little essay in the back about Peter David's relationship with George Perez, which was very sweet.
It was. I read that essay.
Yeah.
I've complained about the essays, but like this one was like, let me tell
that's
you
different.
About
it. Like, oh, yeah, is, that wasn't yeah, a, no, totally. Here's why we did the book. This was, my friend is sick and I feel sad about it. And it was very good. This has been great. Josh and I have talked about all these miniseries. Peter David still has it. If he was a new writer, I'd be like, this guy is terrific. Get him on everything. he still got it. And Herman Peralta, through these miniseries, has become one of my favorite artists working at Marvel. And, you know, there's always a danger with prequel books where you know where it's heading, so it's not that interesting, exciting, you know, message to Hollywood. But it's still a lot of fun to explore this world as we get to the Future Imperfect story, which Josh has never read. I think we're going to do as a book explode when this is over.
I've actually never read it either.
To sort of tap, you know, maybe we'll get all three of us on to sort of cap off the whole story. But, you know, that's not a long book. I think those are two prestige comics. Whereas this, you know, this gets us flesh the world out. We get here and here we get Namor, an awesome asshole Namor, which you didn't think he could get more asshole-y, but then he has that facial hair. Because Namor always finds a way.
That is a great design. Although, I got to say, and this might be on purpose, his sandals really bothered me.
Yeah.
His toes, either be barefoot or not, but those are just flip-flops. And I was like, ugh. But then I was like, you're Namor. That's like, he's like, oh, do my feet upset you?
Right. It's like, I'm too old to just wear a thong, but I'll find a way to put some thong elements into my outfit.
But also, he knew it would bother me.
Exactly.
Like, and wore them on purpose. Like, that puts me off my game, and therefore he can dominate me.
It's a great design. I love the super obvious gills on his neck, too. Like, they don't always draw Namor with those gills on his neck. And I don't know, like, canonically if he's supposed to have them or not, but, like, he's got to breathe underwater somehow. And so I just, that as a design element, I liked it.
So you've got Abomination joins the story. Doom is all fucked up from the last miniseries, but he's still in play. Rick Jones is going to become a factor.
That was my favorite page of the entire thing.
Old hobbled Doom.
Up, in his wheelchair and he shows up to talk to Rick Jones. Jones is like, oh, hey, Steve, it's been ages. Oh, I was just like, that's so good. That is the best single panel of like a Marvel, deep Marvel joke I've seen in the longest time. And because these guys are all old, like, you know, they were enemies, but Doom is like, you know, they know Rick, he knows Rick Jones. Like, they're just like old, you know, like they used to work together almost.
Yeah.
And just that little
old,
bit of
they're old work friends.
Oh.
And then you have the Human Torch, the original Human Torch joins the fray, and then a reveal that Maestro's Major Domo, his secondhand guy, is actually Toro undercover. And I was like, yes, this is just dive deep, Peter David. Get them all in there. So you've got Maestro and original Human Torch and Toro and Namor. It's actually very Invader-Z. But
yeah,
Toro
has a... Yeah, you're right. You're just missing Steve.
I thought this was terrific.
Toro has such a ridiculous hat. He looks like that character from Red Sonja. It's just
yes.
It's very silly in a great way. I think it was the last page. I think the last page is fantastic.
Yeah.
Human Torch, who's very formidable in this, comes back, you know, and beats up Hulk, or, you know, hits him really hard, and a flaming Hulk body just tears through the wrecked city, and it's such a beautiful drawing and composition and the color. And, you know, and he crawls his way out of the ashes. But, like, as we get to the end of it, it looks really rough and sketchy. That last page, which is sort of just what it, you know, you could say, hey, maybe he was getting to the end of it, the deadline, but I'm going to say it was a creative choice.
He's all burnt up. Yeah,
I like that. You're totally right, though. It looks rougher.
Yeah.
But in a way that works for the story, it's cool. And I think, if I remember correctly, the Jim Hammond Human Torch, his thing is, like, if he's exposed to oxygen, he flames on. Like, he doesn't have as much control as Johnny, but I think in a way that also makes him more powerful.
Possibly, yeah.
That's why whenever he's introduced in a comic, he's always in, like, that glass tube, right? Because they have to keep him in an oxygen-free environment.
Well, later on, he's able to control it.
That's surprisingly good science for a Golden Age comic book.
Right. I think he's got control in terms of, like, you know, being able to fly and shoot flames and stuff like that. But I think there is an element of... He's more volatile, I guess.
In the West Coast Avengers book that Josh and I did at the Book Explode, he was on a team just walking around in human form. Like,
they changed it over time.
Yeah.
Right, but originally that was sort of part of it, I think.
But here he has the...
Also, flames, I want to point that out... Is. Whatever. The last page of this, I was just talking about again, there's the yellow-orange color of the flame, and they did the sky and the ground slightly greenish instead of blue, and it just looks gorgeous. Like, it's really wonderful coloring, and the reflection of the flame off the Hulk, and
Jesus Bertoff and Matt Hollingsworth, great stuff.
Stuff goes unnoticed, and it shouldn't, because it's great.
Yeah. No, what I was saying about the double flame was that he's, you know, Ryan is saying he's more powerful, so he clearly has another level of power here. And this has been terrific. I love Smart Hulk here. I don't always love Smart Hulk in general, but the evolution of the character into Maestro, he's scarier because he is Hulk, Banner plus Hulk at this point, which is not unusual for Hulk, but in this story, he makes him very formidable because he knows things.
So you're telling me that Doom, who is the master scientist and builder and a sorcerer, has just an old rickety metal wheelchair.
couldn't get out of his nest. Professor, well, even any of the floating ones lying around.
Or maybe that's just the one that the butler put him into. What's he going to do? He can't fight back. Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 8.
Yeah. Story by Tom Taylor, art by John Torney. Inks. We got inks on this one by Raul Fernandez. Colors Federico Blue, and letters by Dave Sharp. You guys still reading this?
I was going to be out with this one after I finished it, but I saw it. The next issue is a two-issue crossover with Nightwing, so I figured, well, I'm going to read that first part, so I'll finish it. But I'm basically done with this book.
I was like, did I already drop this book? Because I know I was thinking about it, but I didn't read it.
So what about it isn't working for you guys?
The foundational concept offends me.
True.
So that's the problem. I think John is annoying. I think that There's nothing subtle about this book, which is interesting because Tom Taylor is usually very good at that stuff.
That is a good point, actually.
But everything is sort of hitting you over the head. His relationship, his sexuality, his political views. It's all very obvious and in your face. And I don't know. It's not connecting. I don't know why.
I got to say, and I don't mean this in a negative way, although it's going to sound that way. It is a very millennial book.
No, I think it's is it millennial or is it Gen Z?
Yeah, it's very Gen Z.
I think this is younger than me.
You're right though, but it is one of those things where like your politics and your feelings and your identity and all of those things are up front.
It
informs everything that you do in every way that you define and present yourself. Which is again is not a criticism.
Yeah, the HR woman at Mythic Quest hates this book.
Right.
Just because it's all up in its feelings.
It's interesting to think for me to be like, well, does that mean it relates to people? Or if you're like a Gen Z person, you're like, oh, this old person also doesn't get it. This boomer is 45.
Maybe. I don't know. The couple of things that are still working for me about this book is I like how John Kent has empathy for people in a way that is true to the idea of being Superman, but feels distinct a little bit from the way Clark does.
That to me could be a generational thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like Superman comes from the strong, silent man.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's more paternal. Like Clark is more paternalistic, which is obvious, I think. But, you know, whereas John, I think, it just comes at it from a slightly different angle. I also have like this probably isn't a weird affection, but I don't know another adjective to use for it, for Superman stopping a natural disaster, not like a monster. And he's stopping a monster in this issue, but the monster at one point causes a tidal wave. And like Superman solving those kinds of problems, where like, how do I solve a force of nature, have always been fun for me. Because I think some of the earliest Superman stories that I consumed as a kid were him, you know, stopping the volcano or turning the tide of a mighty river, that kind of stuff. Seeing you know, the John Kent version of him working with Aqualad to stop a tidal wave from hitting Metropolis, you know, using a combination of like the Hulk slap and to create a force wave and the freeze breath to freeze parts of it. I just thought, cool. I like when he has to solve a problem that's more than just punching a bad guy.
But they didn't stop it.
Yeah.
And that's what bothers me, is that it feels like the book is telling me that he made the right choice to not kill the monster. And then he let thousands of people die. And I feel like that's a problem, because while the monster might not have been evil, it's a choice. It's the whole, you know, kill one person to save the situation. And here it seems like they're saying to me the right choice was to let the monster live. And that really bugged me.
Superman can't ever make that choice. He has to save it. Like Superman can't make the choice to let anyone die. And so his thing is that he can't. Now, you got two ways to go about this. This is either a newer sort of version of looking at that, or B, this is a developing and growing Superman who's learning how to make those decisions of what his values are. He's not Clark Kent. So, and at the same time, like, the monster's not a monster. It's just a big animal who's there and who is scared. I also like the, why can't you just pick him up? And he's like, it would be like a needle going through whatever it was. I like the sort of the physical elephant aspect of that. And I think you're right. Like the natural disaster element of the thing was kind of interesting.
I love all the Gamora stuff with Bendix.
I don't care about any of this stuff. Yeah.
As much as I loved like the Authority and what was it, Stormwatch? Was that the, like, I liked all those series from Warren Ellis back in the day, but this isn't that.
No. I also really like the drawings of the monster. All the disaster art was fantastic. Like the creature looked like a big sea creature, you know. You know, realistic enough, but still huge and impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I like things about it, but I didn't like everything about it.
I can appreciate that.
Are you both still going to stay on it? I'm going to be reading the next one, and that's it, I think. Unless it's really good.
I'm fully sticking with it, because Tom Taylor is sort of, I think he's my favorite writer at DC right now, if I had to, you know, throw one out there. So I'll stick with whatever he's doing, just out of some faith.
I mean, even if I don't like this thing, his track record is amazing. And I don't hate this. I'm not like, no, this is the worst thing ever. It's just weird. And it might not be for me. want to take a quick second to beg. No, I want to thank the patrons. You can go to patreon.com/ifanboy to directly support the show. And I was thinking about this morning, and I was like, oh, I don't ever want to half-ass my reading of the comics and go through anything for no other reason than the people who are listening would be disappointed. And I think it is so fascinating and humbling that that people will be like, yes, I will send you some money so you keep doing this thing. And that really keeps me going. So when it's 1 a.m. and I'm like, I got to read more comics, I don't skip over them. I push my way through them, and then I'm tired in the morning because of it. But it's a cool position to be in. So if you do that, A, you have my eternal support, obviously. But B, you can unlock shows for everybody. And the amount of shows that we have to do now, I've really shot ourselves in the foot here.
Too many shows.
It's a lot of shows. There's the talk explode, the book explode, the media explode, your various splodes of the Azores, and no, that's not a thing. And it's a great community. It always has been a great community. You know, it's like this little leftover thing, you know, that has been part of iFanboy forever, that just is all, like, the community is really the big part of it, and this is a big extension of that. I'm sorry, I'm feeling apparently gushy this morning about that kind of thing, but genuine things I was thinking this morning. So get over to patreon.com/iFanboy to see how you can be involved with that. There's hangout shows and everything. And again, thank you just for everybody who does that. There's iFanboy@threadless.com, where you can get 12 designs on t-shirts and items of many, many stripes. Including our newest design, gosh, good old superheroes. I got to pick one of those up. I'm wearing my GDAT shirt right now, and it brings me such joy. I every time I pick it up, I'm like, oh, God, I love this. And I hope that they give you people out there some modicum of that joy. You can also go to ifanboy.com/support, where you can make direct donations via PayPal if you want to do that. That sort of virtual tip jar, as we've said many times before, without any of that other stuff going along. We appreciate that as well. All of that, you know, being the idea that this is a small thing we do relative to other stuff, but it actually does take a heck of a lot of time and commitment. And sort of, so it, you know, your side on the other side of it is to, you know, show that you support that. I don't know if we would keep doing it forever. I don't know if we'd be able to stop, but you're definitely keeping it going right now. And then finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you can buy the books that we talk about on Booksplode. You'll find a link to the music in every show on the show page. You'll find a link to the pick of the week that you could buy digitally or buy a physical copy if for some reason you can't find a comic store around you, or you don't go to, yes, the last one here, bookshop.org. We've partnered with bookshop.org to help out local bookstores. So if you want to buy books and you don't want to go through that one big retailer, and you can help out some of these local, smart, important, vibrant, necessary businesses of local bookstores, that's what bookshop.org is for. You'll find the links where they fit in on the website. And we're very happy about that. Let's move along to more comics. Oh, look, I just saw what he put in at the end of this part. Okay, go on.
Who put the Avengers on this list?
I did.
All right.
I did.
Just explain yourself.
I kind of like it. I like it's getting kind of, it's getting like wacky. It's getting like crazy wacky. And for some reason, like, I like the idea that, first of all, for the first time in my life, I kind of understand what a deadlock is. And I never have. I like that there's some sort of culmination that is happening as a result of this celestial body that they're living in, you know, and the thing that's going on. They blew it up. I thought they were going to get up and it was going to walk around. But I don't know. Like, I feel like, after all these things and not quite being into it, Aaron is still leaning into this, and he's going to make his thing work. And I've grown a sort of affection for this team to a certain extent. I really like, you know, listen, baby Thanos is kind of dumb, but he's written really well with the construction of what he is, and his fight with Namor was engaging to me.
The art was terrific. Juan Furigiri is great.
And I feel like there's very few moments in this book where the team has been a team. And I think that's an issue I'm having with it, is they just aren't together doing Avengery. They're not assembling. They're disassembled, if I could, you know, coin
that's
a phrase.
Excellent. That's an excellent bit of criticism.
Yeah. I really like the idea of the Avengers 1 million BC. Like, for whatever reason, that to me is in that wacky Jason Aaron territory in a way that works. But I feel like we're just not getting to what the point of it is quickly enough for me to maintain my interest.
I think I have adjusted my expectation of what I think that this book is. It's taken me a while, apparently 53 issues. And I've enjoyed parts of it. I haven't enjoyed other parts of it, but I've never thought about dropping it. I just keep reading it because, you know, there's a decor. There's stuff here that I like. I think that it doesn't necessarily all hold together really well, but there's still been enough for me to enjoy. And now that we're not talking about the vampires and we're not dealing with, you know, whatever else, at least this is a bunch of Avengers in the Avengers Fortress and they're fighting extra bad versions of Marvel villains. Like, there's a super evil Doom.
It makes me think, what you just said there reminded me, I think one of the problems I have with this book is that nothing is kind of stuck. You know, we started introducing the whole vampire conflict and that just sort of came and went. It feels like there's been a lot of ideas and none of them have really been fully explored. You know, what happened to the bear guy?
Yeah.
You know, and his whole betrayal of the team. Like, it's just,
I think that stuff, it seems all like we're moving at like a freight train. Books.
I don't know.
Right, like Ghost Rider's not in this issue because he's off doing another thing in a different alternate reality, and
I haven't fully formed my idea about it, but I think I'm trying to figure out why. You know, we've been trying to figure out why for 53 issues this book hasn't been connecting with us the way we thought it would, and I just.
But you're still reading it.
Yeah, like you said, I've never thought about not reading it.
That's interesting.
It's weird.
I think I'm in the same boat.
That's, well, yeah. But I enjoyed this one, and that's kind of where I'm taking it, day by day. You know, like, I was like, it was big and crazy, and there was explosions and big Namor fight where he could kind of, you know, beat the shit out of somebody who also happened to be a child. So
good Namor week.
I'm legitimately bummed the Celestial Mountain got blown up. I kind of liked the Avengers base being a giant Celestial. That was like, there was a couple issues back where they had the map, the layout. Love a layout. That's cool.
I feel like as we're coming to the end of Jason Aaron's run, he's clearing the decks, you know?
Yeah.
It's been his thing for his run. And let the next person define their whole situation. Mm-hmm. But speaking of day to day and month to month and week to week, is Batman Catwoman number 10, as we are now 2 issues away from the end of this whatever this is. I don't know. What are we talking about? I mean, Clay Man is finally back. He's been gone for like 4 issues.
This is the only issue he's done in the year.
Yeah, I can't get into this book. I don't know why.
Again, it's almost the same thing with Avengers, although I haven't been as lost. I think Liam Sharp was totally wrong for this book. I think
totally wrong. Really, it was a bad idea.
Sidetracked.
Well, he's a great artist. It was a bad idea.
Totally wrong. And yeah. So having Clayman back on, actually, I understood what was going on. I think this was a pretty clear book that was still conceptually bold. You had 3 different timelines going on. It seems like they're going to tell us that Joker is Helena's father, which is pretty bombshelly, but also very overdramatic comic booky. I think this is another one. Like, I enjoyed this issue. I'm not entirely sure how it all fits together. And because of the release schedule, it's been so disjointed that it kind of never had a chance. But I don't have a dog in this fight, so I just kind of like watching the craft and the experiment of the thing.
Yeah, that's the real thing is
too.
There's no emotional, I think, resonance because of the delays and because it's so strange. I did find myself, you know, impressed with the structure of this issue, where pages would take place over 3 time periods, and the conversations would be consistent throughout. And that was interesting. And I love Clayman. I think the book is 100 times better when he's drawing it, even at that point, still it doesn't totally work. You know, and that's fine. Tom King has done a lot of great 12-issue stories, and this is one that I think hasn't worked, and it's unfortunate because it's a Batman. He, you know, he came to prominence for most people through his Batman run. But
and I feel like I remember something from Josh's Talksplode, where this is the story that he was planning on ending his run with. His Batman main Batman run with, or is this?
Yes,
am I
yes, it would have been supposed to be the main book. Yes, yeah. I don't know if it was
Black Label.
I mean, it got torpedoed in a lot of ways. I mean, like there was a tidal wave sort of leaning against everything. I mean, the delays in the art.
And who knows if this had been the same story if he'd played out in the regular book or not? But his run was supposed to end on the main book with this Batman Catwoman story, but
I do think it's gone on too long. I think that it didn't need to be 12 or whatever it is.
And I think the thing about it that doesn't work for me is I have a hard time buying that Joker and Selina Kyle have this like deep relationship that is important to either of them in a way that just feels, it just doesn't ring true to me.
Yeah.
And this book hasn't convinced me that it
I like
it
the
should.
Contrast of all of it. I think it's a natural extension of the fact that Batman and Catwoman would have a relationship and she is a criminal and he's into like, and it, this is like pulling, well, what does that mean? Cause she, you know, they say, well, we used to all, you know, all the villains used to sort of be connected to each other and hang out. And I was like, that's true. That is what it's like. And I feel like this is just like not a treatise, but like a rumination on that idea. Like, well, what if you bring this out? And so I don't think of this as canon. I don't think of this as the main Batman story. I never thought of that, you know, even on his main run. And so all that said is like, well, you know, game it out. What does this look like? What does it play like? And I find that part interesting. And I think that's part of what's interesting for Tom. I think, you know, like it's like, well, what is the natural extension of a lot of these if you really think about it? And that's the other side of that is I don't think it always makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, because it's anyway. I think it's exploring the idea that like there have been a lot of women in Bruce Wayne's life that he has loved and have loved him back. And some of those would have been, you know, more appropriate choices for him as a crime fighter and a hero. And yet he keeps circling back around to this woman who is a thief and a crook. And it's an interesting juxtaposition.
We don't make the best choices.
Mm-hmm. Especially since there's a movie coming out.
On to other Bat.
Batgirls. Anybody else reading Batgirls? Batgirls number 3 this month.
I am not.
Should I?
Right?
Jorge Corona is the artist, and he was the artist on that Scotty Young book, Middle West. And Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad are the writers who are writing Wonder Woman. And it's been fun. There's been something that keeps me from loving it, but I love that there's books like this where you've got a guy like Jorge Corona, who is not your typical DC House style artist, doing a book that stars Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain and Barbara Gordon as this little team of Batgirls running around. And there's always something really visually interesting about this each issue of this book so far. I mean, it's only been 3 issues, but the art's terrific. The story's been fun. No, they're being tormented by these villains and these new villains. So there's a hacker tormenting Barbara, and there's this guy, an artist villain who's tormenting Cassandra and Stephanie, and he's sort of like Scarecrow light. And they're all trying to figure out how to be in this new role. And I like Cassandra and Stephanie's relationship, where Stephanie's the motor mouth and Cassandra's the quiet one. It's fun, you know, but Barbara runs into an ex-boyfriend and they tease her over to comms about it. And they have a nice relationship. I like that. This would be a fun TV show of these three women, you know, trying to figure it out. The only criticism I have, and this is not really this book, it's just in general, I think Cassandra talks too much.
Because she used to literally not be able to talk.
She's not supposed to talk at all.
Right. Yeah, I think if they want to give her an arc, I think she should say no more than 3 words at a time.
Because she was only taught the language of violence, right?
Violence and human body language. She can speak. She can, you know, that was her whole thing. She could read body language like language. But they have her talk, not as much, but, you know, like I'm looking at a page here where she's got 3 consecutive word balloons and 12 words. Like, that's too many. You know, too many. But it's beautiful. Just at least check it out for the art. I love the fact that there's places now in DC for guys like Jorge Corona to draw a Batman book, which is
cool.
Do you remember how in the like early days of Grant Morrison's JLA run, like Martian Manhunter would always have to link them up psychically so they could communicate? And now it's just we accept that you can have a small thing in your ear that keeps us all connected and you can just keep a conversation going even when in the middle of a superhero fight?
Yes.
Yes.
I feel like if you told me that was going to be a thing back in the day, I would have been annoyed by it. And yet I most of the time love it. Like, I love that the characters can keep communicating at a distance no matter what's going on in the book.
I think there'd be more interference. I mean, here's us, right? We're having communication issues today because of technology. Yeah. I would think that would affect their... I mean, they probably have a better network or whatever, but there's no perfect network.
Or even just you're getting punched in the head. The earbud might just fall out.
Sure.
The only perfect network is John Jones's mental network.
Well, then there needs to be more John Jones.
Even that is subject unless, to when whether he gets exposed to fire or not.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. That's, like, a match could fuck that whole thing up. They can't work in Southern California.
That's true.
Like, fire kills everything. It doesn't just kill Martians. Like, if I was lit on fire, I would also be damaged.
Yeah. Well, it's not just lit on fire. But it freaks, being near fire.
It freaks him out.
Yeah.
Like, he's wouldn't it freak you out if somebody was, like, like putting a torch in your face?
No, he sees fire and he screams in a high
pitched voice. It's like you can't even make a fire in your fireplace around him.
Well, I have a gas
fireplace. Like it's like some people with spiders.
Yeah. Well, so should we just jump to the patron pick? So is it time for the patron pick?
Actually, there's another book on the list. Now, I have a pitch. Let's see what you guys think. All right. Maybe not Morphin Corner or Power Corner. How about Mighty Morphin Rotunda? Can I get a Rotunda?
No, you don't get a whole Rotunda.
How about a gazebo? A porch?
You can have the you can have the Saban outhouse.
Mighty Morphin Porch?
No.
That's so much better than what I was going to say. That's so good. I just want all right, you to
well,
know
we're
that.
Gonna, we're
going to
stroll on over to Saban's outhouse and talk about Mighty Morphin issue 16, the Eltarian
what
War.
Is that smell?
I'm going to roll with it. I'm fine. I've used outhouses. I'm from West Virginia. You think I've never been?
I just
want
to make it clear to Mr. Saban, this is not an attack on you. Extremely rich and powerful, Mr. Saban.
This is issue number 16, and I believe this is the final issue written by Ryan Parrott, based on something I saw him say on Twitter. The story is similar to Batman Catwoman, where we're like jumping around in time, and there's the three Eltarians. We've learned that Zed is actually an ancient Eltarian who worked with Zordon back when he was part of the Guardians as empowered by the Eltarians. But the thing that was really interesting to me is the Rangers finally get a handle on fighting these Imperials, which are these very, very powerful cosmic beings that sort of Galactus level threats. And the way they do it is they got all their Zords going. They got the Mega Thunder Zord, they got the Omega Zord, and they got the White Tiger Dragon Zord, which is a combination of the White Tiger Zord and the Dragon Zord, which is fucking awesome. And Drakkon shows up, so we know that's gonna go. So he's you guys know that Drakkon is Tommy from an alternate timeline where he went evil, and he brings with him a bunch of space vampires, and they're able to use the space vampires to drain the Imperial enough to kill him. And it ends with Zed. Yeah, it ends with Zed having been stabbed and under the Zordon being stabbed and under the control of Zed, but the Power Rangers succeeded against the Imperial. So one threat down, but more threats remain, I think.
This
for
is
these,
how I felt reading
these,
that Hawkeye
these
book.
Rad teens with attitude. You could call it ratitude. I wouldn't put it against you for calling it ratitude. And yeah, I'll see you guys next time
going?
We head out to the Rotunda.
It's not a Rotunda. No.
Connor.
It's an outhouse from the 1800s.
All right,
Saban outhouse.
I've wiped and I'm done. Move on.
Are we sure this is a real thing he's even talking about?
The thing is, that's what's great about it, kind of, is he could be making all of these words up, and I would be like, sure, that sounds fun.
I get some support in the Discord. Not a ton, but some.
I am 50-50 on whether he's just trolling us.
I would be okay if that was the case as well.
Sure, it's at least there's some artistic integrity in that.
those are the books we're going to talk about. It was a light week, not a ton of books, which was a nice little reprieve because the last couple weeks have been heavy. But the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy, all ifanboy patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the ifanboy patrons decided to give us a second X book in a row. Last week's we had The Excellence. This week, The Secret X-Men number one, the one shot from Teeny Howard, Francesco Mobili, Jesus Bertoff, and Clayton Cowles. And this book made me angry.
Go on.
I just did not like reading it in any. I didn't like the art. I didn't like the writing. I hated the main character. I was angry reading it. I was like, when is this over? It was exercise. It kept going. It was never ending. I didn't like the colors. I didn't like the art. I didn't like anything about it.
Sticking with it?
It's just one shot.
Joke. I came to a conclusion because I saw Connor early on said this is Secret X, and I went okay. And what I think is, like, people know what I'm gonna say about it, but I do always. This is why I had the thought earlier about the patrons. I was like, okay, I have to try, I have to pay attention, I have to go in with an open mind, And I think the problem that keeps happening with these X-Men books, and I'm going to keep this to since Hickman's thing, mm-hmm. is that this is an issue number one. It's the it's clear to me that X-Men creative and editorial have completely eschewed the idea of trying to get anybody into these books in a way that don't know it already. Because this is what always happens in these books, is that 45 characters show up. I don't know who any of them are. I don't know anything about their relationships with each other or their personalities. You know, other than having different drawn heads, everybody's the same. You know, I feel like there probably is something there, but I'd never get to it because it's just too many moving pieces swirling around, and nobody tries to ingratiate a new reader, which
I actually had that same thought, because there's on page 8 is the hero shot of the team. And so the backstory mm-hmm. here is, recently in the real world, there was a fan election to add a character to the X-Men team, like the main X-Men team, and it ended up being Polaris. And we all knew it was going to be Polaris because she was the most popular character on that list. And so they're taking everybody else who was a nominee, and they are the secret X-Men. They decide, fuck it, we may not have been elected to the regular team, but we're going to be our own team of X-Men. And I kind of like that idea. Actually, that was my favorite thing about the whole book, was why do they get to say who's the quote-unquote X-Men? We're going to be the X-Men too. So I liked that. But there's a hero shot on page 8, and I was like, well, that's Banshee, and that's Strong Guy. And that's Forge. And I don't know who anyone else is. And they didn't ever told
telling
you.
No, they said they said it on the page before, didn't they?
They don't tell me who those names correspond to who's on the page.
You can you know. All right, so come on. I know Boom. I know Hisako, Armor.
I don't know.
Mero's the lady with bones on her face. That's
I know
scant.
That much. You just told me everything I know about her.
The problem I had was, you know, Roberto's putting the team together and he's talking about like all the people being sexy. And for whatever reason, as I was reading it, he said, you know, I want Boom Boom on the team because she's sexy. I want Cassidy on the team, or I want Banshee on the team because he's sexy. But I missed for whatever reason, I just read the pronoun as she, because isn't Banshee's daughter also named Banshee?
I don't know.
You're asking the wrong people.
Anyway, I don't have a deep connection with the character, but I think Strong Guy is ridiculous, and I kind of love him.
I mean, I loved him in Peter David's X-Factor. and multiple Man books.
For whatever reason, I couldn't figure out like why. I mean, I know they were the original New Mutants, but like the relationship between Sam Guthrie Cannonball and Roberto just didn't work in a way like they were. I don't know. The way they talked to each other, it was like...
a kid and a space apartment?
Well, are they in a relationship? I don't understand.
No.
Yeah.
Well, they're both both dating women.
Right.
Oh,
that's
I thought they were in a relationship for sure.
No. He was, in the beginning, Sunspot's trying to sleep with those two Shi'ar women, and then Boom Boom keeps talking about his girlfriend. He keeps talking about his girlfriend. Oh, not Boom Boom. Cannonball keeps talking about his girlfriend.
Cannonball. Cannonball's not making enough pasta to feed everyone in the apartment, by the way. That was upsetting.
And the thing is, like, I have a, you know, I've been reading the regular X-Men book. I read Marauders. I gave Excalibur a try, which I think was Teeny Howard's book in the beginning. Like, I have a vague sense of what's going on here, but I was still completely lost as to why I should care. And also, is Sunspot supposed to be this annoying? Or is this a new characterization? Because I could not stand him through the entire
Good
issue.
Good question.
He was obnoxious. I was wondering why he was leading the team. Why anyone would follow him? Why wasn't Forge leading the team? He seems to be the only one who knew what he was doing. Yeah. Like, it just was such a strange comic.
I never got a foothold, and they never tried to give me one. That's what bugged me.
Yeah.
And they also did Cannonball and Sunspot powers as if they were both just kind of versions of the Human Torch, which isn't what they are. There was also some really annoying stuff about like the way they did stuff with space. I don't know that Cannonball's powers work in space if it's fire. And how does a bone Mero's like bone astronaut armor? That was annoying.
I liked that there was comic book science in there. I liked that like they were playing it fast and loose with space. As like, if you're gonna do it, like this is the one of the things I liked. I think was Mero's thing. It's like, I gotta try this out. You know, like I'm going to make it. And no, it doesn't need to make sense, but it's superpowers. And none of that makes sense anyway. Like I can
But then Banshee screams in space, which like, again, you need air for sound to
that.
Travel.
Yeah. No, I did notice that.
I was confused because when Sunspot, who I know nothing about, and I've never known anything about the New Mutants. And the New Mutants is core to the X-Men. I never read, after, you know, the early 90s, Rob Liefeld, never read any of that stuff. I don't know who any of these characters are. I know nothing about them. When he activates his powers, I thought, oh, Nightcrawler's here. I was like, oh, no, wait, that's not Nightcrawler. Like, it was such a bizarre, it was almost like aggressively, like, if you don't know who these people are, we're not going to, you're out of luck.
I just don't know who Deathbird is. They said that name more times than anything else, and I had no idea who that character was.
Right, and Robert, and the issue with the page where Sunspot's powers fully activate is, like, that is what Sunspot looks like when his powers activate, but his, I don't know why his hair changed, and that made it just super confusing. I also don't know why Strong Guy's spacesuit, when he comes out wearing the spacesuit, it's got tiny little hands hanging down from his stomach.
Forge made him a suit from all the suits because they were too small. Forge quickly sewed them all together, or whatever.
Yeah,
he says it. He says Forge had to put me a suit together for me with all the other suits.
Gotcha.
It looked great.
For whatever reason, I didn't get that. But there were just, you know, I feel like there were a lot of storytelling and characterization issues throughout. Unfortunately,
look, take your eyes, defocus on the page, and just flip through it and look at those masses of word balloons explaining shit to us without saying anything. All through it. It is a lot of explanation, a lot of swirling crap that just didn't come together. And I genuinely tried to make sense of it because I thought, you know, I'm not going to just write this off in the beginning, but I was lost the whole, and I'm not dumb. I'm also not unfamiliar with X-Men, but there was no setup. There was no craft here. And I mean, it's what Connor's. It's aggressively saying, if you don't know it, you're lost. And so I'm like, all right, I guess I'll read this. But it didn't feel like I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been fairly up on Hickman's X-Men. So for me to be completely utterly lost means someone who's not up on that is even in a worse position. The other thing is, like, and this has been through all the X-Men books, is I've been skipping these emails and letters and things in the middle of the books.
Yeah, the email I did read it and I bumped on it. Yes. Because, like, it's super tiny font up at the top and bottom corners that, like, it's a draft, so it's not an email that was supposed to have been sent, but the idea in the email is integral to the story itself. And it's also, it was just written in a way of, like, no one writes an email like this. I've never written or received an email that was written with this tone of, like, let me recap what happened to us yesterday so that we can then discuss what to do about that tomorrow, even though, like, oh, you think this thing happened, but it didn't. And I'm like, no human being, maybe it's a mutant thing, no human being writes an email like this. The end.
It was a word scramble. I was like, I can barely read the sequential pages. I'm not playing a puzzle in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're all cop-outs. They're all cop-outs.
Yeah.
I mean, so annoyed at that. I was like, I want this to be over, and you're going to treat me like I'm a child in a diner? Just tell me who the fucking characters are and why I should care. Oh, it's rough. I'm mad now because you guys agreed with me. I thought we were going to get here, and I'd be like, I don't know what's going on. I'd be like, no, there was this and that, but you're saying this is what it is, and this is professional work. Shouldn't be.
They put the Dramatis persona in the beginning, which they do through all the X-Men books, but they're tiny little black and white boxes. And so, you know, it doesn't correspond to anything in the issue itself. It was rough.
Still, comics are always still going to come down to show, don't tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And it helps to have something to refer to, but that doesn't mean that the text doesn't have to do any of the work. I mean the text, I mean the actual sort of story pages. You have to do the work. It's a first issue. I remember, like, a long time ago when I was trying to write comics, I showed Joe Casey something I did, and he goes, you got to have them say all these names. Like, he just, like, because he came from an earlier time, like, you have to, like, this is the thing that the guys from the generation, you know, who had worked before, you know, in the early 90s and before that, they all knew the stuff that they had learned in the 50s and 60s is, like, there's certain rules, and they're not necessarily natural to trying to do your fake screenplay movie dialogue. Yeah. But you have to set things up. You have to set that table.
Everybody says each other's names.
Clunky,
everybody,
but it's better than being lost.
Yeah.
Yes. And you've got to tell me something about each of the characters. There were how many of these? I'm looking at a page of just X-Men. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 characters.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't know anything about them. I thought that the two guys were a couple.
Well, there was a whole thing, and there was a whole thing about like Roberto wants this woman named Tempo on the team, who's not a character I have any familiarity with. And he's like, yeah, because then if we like screw stuff up, she's got like time powers. And I was like, okay, so I guess Tempo is like temporal or whatever. But apparently he didn't understand what her powers were, and they ended up using them differently in the story in a way that, like, I don't know what her powers are either. Like, you didn't tell me what the misconception was, and you didn't tell me what the correction was. You just did it, and I don't understand what happened on either level. All right. And it's super frustrating.
I want to stop finding ways to say the same thing while we're griping about this, the unclarity of this book. I do want to make a rule. Here's my rule. No superhero team in a 20-page comic book is allowed to have more than 6 members unless you are a master writer. If you're Grant Morrison, you can have 7 to 8.
Are we going to add that?
Even then, that's dicey.
I fan gripes? I mean, 6-plus teams?
No, unless they're like elemental to comics. You know, like if this was like, you know, the Avengers that we all, like it's Captain America and Iron Man and Thor, like people you know, everyone knows, you don't have to do the heavy lifting is one thing, but Tempo and Marrow and people, you know, unless you're a hardcore X-Men fan, Armor, I don't know who these people are. Smasher, you know.
By the way, this seems to be a feature of most X-Men books that I have to read, is that like this is just how it is. And maybe that's what X-Men people like, and maybe they've all just accepted, like, we're not going to add X-Men fans at this point. So, but that's, it keeps happening.
Ratings.
6. Give it a 6.
Dot 6.
You're giving it a 6 out of 5.
No.
Ratings.
You get points deducted for each. So if even if I'd given it a 5, there are 4 too many members. So it gets a 1.
My iFan grumble. I think I would go a team up to 7 just because sometimes you want the imbalance, but I see your point, Josh.
Right. Yeah. What I said was that I think 7 feels a little too much, but I know that Grant Morrison did it to great, you know, as better as well as anybody had with his JLA run.
But with Icons. So that's a, there's a difference.
Exactly.
Cannonball. I like Cannonball. He's not an icon.
Yeah, ratings out of 5.
I've seen him 3 times. 2.
1.5.
1.75.
There you go. Don't need to ask sticking with it because it is a one shot. There's nothing to stick with.
I wasn't gonna go with the average of your scores, but when I was legitimately debating between 1.5 and 2, and you guys gave me permission to just split the middle.
Yeah. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can add a book to the rundown, but patrons who give the $5 or a higher level get their own superpower live on the show. Let's do it.
Sam DuRose or DuRose. I don't usually go blue, but he's like Black Bolt, but with farts. Black Bolt, like, and he's got to watch his ass. It's not like you think you're in a meeting and you've got to hang on. Like, he can't eat pretty much anything. Like, he's got to stay away from fresh vegetables. He, like, forget chili. He could blow the world up.
Is it planet requires ending power like Black Bolt's? Because he's just, he can't help that. That's natural biology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's like, You also learn incredible control.
That's what I was gonna ask. Does he have Black Bolt's fortitude?
It's not the force. It's not the force. It's the audible. So you have to control the sound. You see,
okay.
And this is why I don't go blue very often, because I think it's quite cheesy. But it made me laugh when I wrote it down. So,
did you just write down Black Bolt farts? Is that what you did?
No, what I did was I wrote like Black Bolt, but with, and I stared at it for a while, and I was like, I can't think of anything that makes me laugh like farts does.
Yeah.
I like Black Bolt with, and then I was like, well, there's nothing else. I was like, well, I can't do that. So I wrote scratching. You can't scratch because it would be too loud, but you know, I would have felt like I was avoiding the obvious choice, which there. But listen, with great power must come great control and responsibility. So
there are a few times in our relationship where I've tried to explain some comic book thing to my wife where she's been as delighted as she was to learn that Black Bolt's real name is Blackagar Boltagon.
Blackagar Boltagon.
It's just one of the greats.
I think about it often.
I feel like this next patron shouldn't get a power.
Yeah, it is confronting. Yeah,
it could be disqualified.
But it was written this way, and so it was. I wrote it out that way, and I assigned it to Connor on purpose.
I thought maybe this patron is identified as Misa called Micah. Misa, your humble patron.
Fuck. It's a symbiont circle, Connor.
You said it. You don't have to say it again. You said it.
Connor, it's a symbiont circle. You must understand that. They give us money, and then we give them content. It's a symbiont circle.
Micah, in any situation or any conversation, becomes an instant expert in the field of whatever's being talked about.
Ugh.
Oh, it's so, just a dude?
It's just, yeah.
So,
just me and
but
my
legitimately,
worst.
So, you know, from, you know, Micah could be in a government meeting and becomes an instant expert on foreign policy, or in at Capitol Records and become an instant expert on producing music or music marketing, whatever the meeting happens to be. But as soon as he leaves the meeting, so does the knowledge. As soon as he leaves the conversation, so does the knowledge. Whatever's being discussed, he becomes an expert in that discussion.
Do you think that people accept it, or they just think, oh, this guy's full of shit, he doesn't know anything?
Well, he clearly knows what he's talking about. From the conversation.
Right. Well,
conversation.
But people, this ego, there's whatever. It'd be best if they knew that that was his power.
Yeah, that's true.
Because otherwise, he would just sound like an asshole.
Would it cause a hemorrhage if he had to discuss at length the Dunning-Kruger effect, the idea that like people who don't know much about anything think they're, like, they know a little about something, think they're an expert relative to experts who understand the limits of their own knowledge?
Well, he'd become an expert in that theory. Like, he's a legitimate expert
in
whatever's
being discussed.
But
is the paradoxical nature of the Dunning-Kruger effect, like, would that, you know, potentially hurt him?
No, he would just become an expert in that discussion.
I think it would. Right. I think it would hurt people's opinion of him, but maybe that's got to be some sort of sideways thing, is that he's so correct that people can't help but understand and agree with him, although in this world, I can't see that happening at all.
I was listening to a podcast where they improperly described the Dunning-Kruger effect, and it was like poetry in motion. I was like, well, that's exactly
I think about this a lot, and I know we've had a lot of diversions, but there was a thing on This American Life years and years and years ago, and it was a phenomenon that they dubbed American Jackass. And it was the idea that if you knew like a little thing about something, like if you go into a art museum and you look up at a Picasso and you happen to have read one thing about it, you talk about that like you're an expert. Oh, well, the blue here, they actually said is to represent, and you don't know anything else, but you present that you are an expert about it in that one, which I've been guilty of 1,000 times. We did a show, actually.
All right.
I try not to be. American Jackass. Anyway.
Next one.
Paul Peterson has an amazing power. Truly a gift, I think. Paul's left eye can transform into a telescope, and his right eye can transform into a microscope.
Oh.
And if he does both at the same time, he explodes.
Binoculars. He's got binoculars.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Good answer. Way to go. Did you just get that part?
No. I've been thinking about this. I had a long drive yesterday. I was thinking about this a lot. I was thinking about how it'd work. Okay. But Paul, yeah. So like if it's a, you know, beautiful night out and Paul wants to see the moons of Jupiter, he can just close his right eye and just squint real hard with his left eye, and he can telescope it out and see into the distant cosmos. And if he's trying to like clean the kitchen counter and wants to see if there are any, you know, germs or bacteria still lingering, he just closes the left eye and squints real hard with the right eye, and he can microscopically see the surface of the countertop and know what's going on.
That's a great power.
I was really excited when I came up with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to give you that.
Patreon.com/fanboy. Thanks to Paul. Misa called Micah. Misa, your humble patron. And Sam for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. So we have to skip the emails because we've gone long.
Yeah.
But contact@iFanboy.com is where you can write in to get your email on the show. Sorry for the ones we had in the script but didn't get to. We'll hopefully get to you next week. Also, you can write in for the Media Explode show. Just put that in the subject. Let's talk about other shows we've got coming up. Previous to this show, we had our Spider-Man No Way Home review, which I quite enjoyed, both the movie and the review. So you can find that back in the feed. This month, somehow in the next 2 weeks, we've only got 2 weeks left of the month, we have Talksplode coming to you. Josh's second part of his discussion with editor Will Dennis. It's in the can. It's going to come out. We have our booksplode of the new Teen Titans, the Judas Contract. We have a media splode, which we're going to talk about the Book of Boba Fett season one. And also we have the animated Brain Trust talking about Catwoman Hunted. Somehow we have four shows coming up. They probably all won't come out in February because it just happened that way. There's only so much time.
The viewers at home couldn't see it, but when you said there were only 2 weeks left in the month, my eyes visibly widened in panic.
Exactly. I don't know how that happened. But like we said last year, the shows may not come out on a straight schedule, but you will get six booksplodes, you'll get six talksplodes, and then the other shows will happen as they happen. And then also, the first week of March is the Batman release, and we'll figure out when that's going to happen. I'm probably going to try to see it Saturday morning when it's not super crowded, so maybe we'll get it out that next week. But we'll figure it out. We won't wait so long. Ryan, how is Science Sort of going?
Good. We recorded a really fun episode recently where we talked about, we had an update on the Tonga eruption, that giant volcano that erupted in the South Pacific that like sent a shockwave around the entire atmosphere and created flooding in California. Mm-hmm. And we talked about other things. I'm completely blanking on what we talked about in our last episode other than the Tonga eruption. But there was some climate change. There was some... the James Webb Telescope. I think that's why I was thinking about telescopes. We talked about the deployment of the James Webb Telescope, talked about Lagrange points, what those mean, why you're able to park things in space in certain points between the Earth and the Sun. It was a really good discussion. I'm looking forward to getting it out there.
Awesome.
I find all of that quite fascinating, I gotta say. You can find all of our shows over at ifanboy.com, less fascinating, as well as our archive of much less fascinating comic book writing from our talented staff. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, so you can be prepared. You'd say, well, these guys like this book. I should read this. And then when I listen to the show, I will fervently agree or disagree, and it will add a whole other flavor to things. Or just don't bother. Go to iFanboy. I'm sorry, at iFanboy on Twitter or at iFanboy Comics on Instagram to see what that is. You can follow us individually. CSKL Patrick, J.A. Flanagan, and Ryan Haupt on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to keep up to date with the old video show re-uploads. The full-length shows are all uploads. We're just doing minis. This past week, we had Brian Posehn.
Nope.
I didn't change this.
Nope.
This is the worst script I've ever done. To be fair, I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
Pick of the week, Wolverine 67 and Scott Chandler, who just had a birthday this week.
Oh. He did. San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. Scott Chandler, San Diego Comic-Con 2008. So another Comic-Con interview and Josh's Wolverine pick of the week review.
So that tells me that when we talked to him, he was 38. And boy, the distance between 38 and 50 feels like quite a ways. But the dates on that do not suggest that. So just smoke him if you got him.
Yeah. If you like the show, consider leaving a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. That helps people find podcasts. Helps all the shows you listen to, Science Sort Of, any podcast you listen to, please consider leaving a review or star rating. It helps the algorithm, and the all-knowing algorithm is how we survive. Even better than that's word of mouth. If anybody asks what podcast you listen to, it always helps to spread the word, and we do appreciate that. And that's it for this week's show. Put a bullet in it. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
And I remain Ryan. We'll see you next week. Please just stay safe out there. Don't slip on the ice. Wear a mask. Do all the good things for other people.